This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting on FM in Australia and New Zealand and around the globe. Adam Devlin is in Brisbane, and he is our Australian political correspondent. Rachel Brunson is our entertainment reporter, and she's in Melbourne. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks.
Howdy.
Now, you guys, you're both nomads, clearly, for the last couple of years. Have you settled down yet?
Oh, you know, there's still boxes and stuff, but pretty. But look, you know, when am I ever gonna? My life's ruled by a man who likes to move, and I hate it. But I don't know. Well, I've said to him I'm not going anywhere, but I keep saying that, and he keeps moving me. So who knows?
And Adam,
I've still got boxes that I packed in Sydney 15 years ago.
Nice. There you go.
That's the way. That's the way to go. We were talking last week. Adam, you sound very, very happy where you are. We're going to talk about Anzac Day in a minute, but I just wanted to bring up Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. Now, there's this court case going on, and I just was watching CNN. It's actually just finished about 2 hours ago. I don't know what the result was. Isn't this all a bit silly stuff? I mean, Johnny lost half a finger.
Yeah, he did, but you know, it's, you know, she went and she actually never said that he did anything, but it was pretty obvious who she was talking about. She did an op-ed piece in the Washington Post and said she was a public figure who had experienced domestic abuse. And everybody knows that she meant him, and everybody, but she never actually said so. So it's a bit murky, this whole libel business. She never said that it was him. She was very careful not to. But, geez, it's messy. And talk about sort of airing your dirty knickers out for the whole world to see. It's gotten beyond ridiculous.
There are no winners here, are there?
No.
The lawyers.
Destroying each other's image and careers. I mean, it's just the saddest of ways to end a relationship. It really is.
I was so much money involved, and I was just trying to say that the lawyers are the winners here, and that's often the case.
Oh, God, yeah. Usually they are.
It's money for jam. It really isn't. But, you know, it's just the whole thing's really gotten sort of – it was ridiculous to begin with, and now it's just gotten to the point where it's just sort of vile. And there's just venom's being spewed every which way, and neither one of them comes out looking very good. You know, he's clearly, you know, got some issues, but she clearly has too. So, you know, they were a match made in hell to begin with, and this was only ever going to end in tears.
Yeah, but I mean, surely you would just cut your losses and walk away. I mean, neither of them are broke.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're both quite well off. I mean, Johnny Depp's worth hundreds of millions, apparently. And I'm sure Amber Heard, you know, I'm sure she's not joining up to the dole anytime soon. So, you know, there's no winners here. Just, you know, walk away. Just go, you know what, chalk it up as a bad experience and move on to the next.
Do you think this will damage their careers?
100%. It's already damaged his. Disney walked away from him with the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise and Disney said, you know what, we can't have this on our brand. And for her, she just looks like a difficult unit that nobody wants to hire. So, you know, it's because with her, it's more like, well, if we even breeze past you in the wrong way, you're going to sue us. And you're going to record everything we say and do. So nobody wants to know about her either. So, you know, they've both done a very, very silly thing. As far as retiring on what they already made, him in particular, no worries. He could drift away back to France and nobody would even blink an eye. But, you know, these are people who are creative and who want to do their thing, and they just won't be able to in certain circumstances anymore.
And it's all their own doing.
Yeah.
It's interesting watching him in court, actually, and you can't help remember that this guy is an actor. You know, he's so damn good in court. Regardless of whether you believe what he's doing or not, he sounds like he's telling the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's actor versus actor. I mean, I think he's got more chops than she does, but I mean, you know, and it's hard. I don't feel sorry for either one of them, to be honest, but I sort of feel for her in a way, because women are often sort of perceived in a way where if they don't speak up, they're victims, but if they do speak up, they're harpies.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, so she really couldn't win it either way. I don't know that I would have spent my entire existence recording everything he said and did, but if he's got a pattern of abuse, then she was right to do that, because it's called evidence. But, you know, to use that, for him to sort of have this sort of hubris that he can now turn around and say, well, I'm going to sue you because you didn't say my name. It's all a bit fantastical, I think, you know. It's just nuts.
Adam,
it's so petty and meaningless.
Adam, it is.
You mentioned off air. Two much more interesting characters, Pistol and Boo. Some years ago, just to let our listeners know, they were filming in Australia and they brought in these two dogs illegally, and they got fined and they apologised on TV, which was hilarious because they weren't
Barnaby
acting.
Joyce.
They weren't acting very well.
Our Deputy Prime Minister threatened to have them killed.
One of them?
A gentleman by the name of John Christopher Depp. 51 years old, otherwise aka Jack Sparrow, and he's decided to bring into our nation two dogs without actually getting the proper certification and the proper permits required. Basically looks like he snuck them in. We found out he snuck them in because we saw them taking it to a poodle groomer. Now, Mr. Depp has to either take his dogs back to California or we're going to have to euthanize them. He's now got about 50 hours left to remove the dogs. There is a process if you want to bring animals in. You get the permits, they go into quarantine, and then you can have them. But if we start letting movie stars, even though they've been the sexiest man alive twice, to come into our nation, then why don't we just break the laws for everybody? So it's time that Pistol and Boo buggered off back to the United States.
And he said she's got a new dog. And she named her new dog Barnaby. And he said, well, I'm glad to know I'm still on her mind. You're kidding.
I will try and get some audio grabs of this. The other person I wanted to mention actually was Bob Catter. Now, he's from the National Party, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. He had a bit to say about this as well, and it was hilarious. I can't remember the details, but it was so funny because his voice goes up and down so much that it even made the talk show, the nighttime talk shows in America. So I'll try and find that audio grab as well. Anyway.
He's actually not a National. He's an independent.
Pardon me.
Oh, he's got his own party. The Catter's Australia Party.
That's right. He does.
And he's madder than a box of frogs. He's nuts. But he's hilarious. But, I mean, you go up to Queensland far enough and you enter Catter country and you know you're there.
And they love him.
They love him. Mm. But, you know, he's nuts. He's bonkers. He's talking about arming 13-year-olds and stuff
Yes,
like
give
this.
All the kids a gun.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, bless.
And maybe it is a northern perspective, but if you can't see the Chinese coming at you, you're blind. Every boy in secondary school in Australia has a rifle that he is trained to use in the armory at his school. You answer me, Peter, how the Ukraine, a tiny little country, is holding at bay the second biggest army on earth. How? I'll tell you how. A proliferation of rifles. Every kid in this country for most of the last century did exactly what I was talking about. And if you understand guns or have ever had one in your hand, you will know that you have a feeling of responsibility, not irresponsibility. Mm. You have a feeling of responsibility and maturity, and you have some pride in having an ability to protect your country.
You know, every family's got that crazy old uncle who turns up at barbecues and says inappropriate things. Mm. He is Australia's crazy old uncle.
He's and you know what? I reckon he has a sherbet every now and again too, and he'd be crazy drunk uncle.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If he's crazy drunk uncle and gets his hand on a rifle, I don't want to be anywhere near him.
Okay, now if you've just joined us, I've got Rachel Brunson and Adam Devlin joining us from Melbourne and Brisbane. I want to talk about Anzac Day because, you know, a lot of people around the world, and we have listeners in North America and Europe, will know what Anzac Day is, but then there's a lot of people who don't. Mm.
There's a lot of people who don't. Who's scrolling on their mouth?
That's Adam.
Sorry,
that's
me.
He's fidgety.
I know that sounds.
Give that man a drink.
I was hanging off every word that Henry was saying.
Can you guys just give our listeners an idea of the history of Anzac and Gallipoli?
Anzac was Gallipoli is the Look where it. They landed in Turkey when they were about to wage an attack on the enemy. But in World War One. Yes, and Anzac Day was established as a tribute to those who fell, and Anzac is Australian New Zealand Army Corps, which is what Anzac stands for. But the dawn service is commemorated because that was the time they fell. So initially dawn services were a thing for veterans to remember other fallen comrades, but in more recent times it's become a thing that the general public has been invited to participate in because it wasn't. And, of course, recently they've included service people from, and it was a big stink at the time, if I recall, including Vietnam veterans in particular. But now yes. it's more like it's obviously, you know, as we've gone on and we've had more and more war because, you know, who doesn't love that?
we can't go a generation without one.
We can't. We commemorate the fallen and we don't forget them. So the point of the Anzac Day service is basically to have a stand to so that other service people can stand to. And then they play The Last Post. Mm-hmm. Bugler will play The Last Post. And then they will play Reveille. So this is a time for us to all remember. And 1916 or 15, I think the first one was. So they did the 100 years at Gallipoli not long ago. But nobody's been able to go to dawn services or do anything or participate in any of these celebrations for the last couple of years because of COVID. So instead, they've been having little Anzac Day ceremonies in driveways. So you go to the end of your driveway with a candle and everybody in the street. And it's really lovely. I mean,
it is lovely,
in apartments. Yeah, I live in apartments and I remember when I was living in Melbourne last time, I'd look out the window of the apartment and see all these candles in the windows and it was really sweet and I thought this is nice. But now it's also to celebrate people who are currently serving and people, and of course there's a war everywhere you look and there are service people deployed everywhere. So it's now to thank them for their service as well, because everything that they did and everything that they fell for and everything they currently serve for is so that the three of us can sit and play silly buggers on the radio.
Yes. Adam, can I just get your views on all this?
Yeah, look, it's interesting to me how Anzac Day has changed and morphed over my lifetime that I can recall. You know, when I was a young boy, it was a very revered day, and it wasn't the dawn service and stuff like that. Not many people went to it. But as I've gotten older, in the last sort of 10 years, it's really become a national day, which is good. And I also think it's a little sort of distracting because as the more it becomes, well, the more, especially the first diggers, I don't think there's any diggers left originally. Now, the digger is the nickname that was given to the people the Gallipoli people, the people who landed at Gallipoli, I'm pretty sure the last one of those died just not too long ago, but I could be corrected on that. As we've had less and less original Anzacs in the parade and on TV and such, it's become more of a national day just to celebrate or commemorate Australia's armed forces and what we've done around the world, because there hasn't been a major conflict in the world since Australia's existed that we haven't been involved in.
Who knows?
Well, America calls and we follow. It's the ANZUS Treaty. The ANZUS Treaty has got us locked in.
Yeah, but, you know, of course, in World War One, it was Britain calling.
Yes.
And so it has morphed, as I said. I used to be very anti-Anzac Day when I was younger. I used to think that it was glorifying war. My opinion on that has changed over the years. I now think it's a revered day, and it should be. We lost a couple of years ago. We used to get a Monday off for a long weekend for Anzac Day. And then they changed it to say that you would actually get the public holiday on the 25th of April.
No matter what day of the week it was.
The day of week lands on. So it was this year, it was Monday. But if it's a Saturday or a Sunday, we don't get a long weekend for it. And I remember that being quite controversial when it happened. But now I think it's the right thing. It's, you know, it's paying reverence to those who fell that they fell.
It's got to be on the day, doesn't it?
Well, they don't change Christmas.
Well, that's right. Rach, I just want to take you up on something you mentioned on social media about some disrespect for Anzac Day. Just give us a rundown on how you feel about that, and what in what ways do people not show respect?
It's something that's always sort of driven me to distraction, honestly, because Anzac Day is, as Adam says, it's a revered day, and respect must be paid. So if you want to raise your glass to the fallen and those who currently serve, then by all means do so, but don't get fall down drunk and act like tool bags. I mean, this is an excuse for people. It used to be, I don't know that it is now, but it used to be an excuse to absolutely get blind and act like a tool, and that's not okay. And I post the same thing every year because it still disturbs me, but I've got a friend who is ex-army, and he made a really good point on my post this year, and he said, you can't commemorate what you don't remember. So if you're going to get blind, rotten drunk, then that's just, it's just disrespectful to the day. It's disrespectful to the people who, you know, laid down everything they had for us and still do. And I just think, you know, if you're going to charge your glass and have a cheers, do that. But don't use it as an excuse to get absolutely...
And, you know, have a game of two up or two. Play, yes. Get involved. Yes. Do that sort of stuff. But, you know, there's no need to get blind drunk. And
no.
Yeah, because that is disrespectful.
Yeah, I want to talk about two up in a second because it's an interesting thing. I do believe, you know, because of the pandemic, there's people... It's been difficult for people to get to Turkey to do this commemoration. But I have heard stories about people getting absolutely drunk over there.
And they do other despicable things. Like they leave all their garbage there. And they, you know, it's just really, don't say you went to say you went. If you're going to go, then
it's not a party.
Yourself. It's not. It's a somber day. You're talking about, you're standing on ground that people died on. Yes. And so much blood was shed. And
I think it's still the worst.
So you can enjoy your freedom and get on a plane and go there. So be respectful.
I think it's still the worst, the highest number of deaths in an actual battle that Australians lost in the one battle. So it was a disaster for us. This is another thing that a lot of people don't understand, or a lot of Australians don't realise, especially the younger people. Listen to me, old man.
Get off my lawn!
is that we lost that battle.
Yeah, we lost.
We lost big time.
Big time.
Yeah. you know, thousands of Australians were killed in Gallipoli. And that's why it's a day of reverence. That's why it's a day that we need to stop and think about what the sacrifice these people made for us, not just a day to have a party.
Now, this is something that intrigues me. Ever since I came to this country in 89, the first Anzac Day, there was this game called Two Up that you could only play on one day of the year, and that was Anzac Day. Well, I wonder what the roots to that are. And Two Up, by the way, someone explain Two Up.
Yeah, two up, it's a very easy form of gambling. It requires two pennies they used to use and a stick of wood. And so you would put the two pennies on the end of the stick of the wood and you would throw it up in the air. The pennies would fall to the ground and people would bet on whether it would be heads or tails.
Simple.
Yeah. Now, it's banned. It's a banned form of gambling in Australia, except for on Anzac Day. Now, it's not legal on Anzac Day. It's just that the authorities allow it to happen.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
You go to an RSL and you'll find a game of two up.
Yeah, you go to most pubs, you'll find a game of two up.
Bet on anything, won't you?
You know, it's interesting.
This was it developed in the trenches in
Gallipoli. Oh, is that right? See, that's what I was trying to find out.
Yes.
Where the source was, right?
Yeah, it was their only real form of, you know, entertaining themselves was to when they weren't in the trenches fighting, they'd play two up. I don't know where the game developed. I don't know where the origins of the game, but I know that's how it became associated with Anzac Day.
Possibly in the trenches.
I don't know if it was developed in the trenches or whether it was something that they picked up and utilised.
Seriously, but seriously, how good are we Australians? We will bet on anything, anywhere, anytime, anyhow.
Yep.
interestingly enough, two up, as you say, it's only legal on Anzac Day. This year, it was legal for all 4 days of the holiday. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
No.
Yeah, they let that happen. So there you go.
That's hilarious.
Right. Well,
no. Meanwhile, here in Queensland on Anzac Day, you could go to the pub and get drunk and go home and bash your wife. That's perfectly fine, but you weren't allowed to go to the supermarket and buy some food.
You can't go buy milk and bread.
No.
Here's the thing. Talking of such things, I think it was near Tullamarine Airport in Melbourne, where all the big stores like Coles and Woolworths, the big supermarket chains, have to close unless, but there was a loophole, you see, because there's a Woolies near the airport and they're allowed
to
open.
That was here in Brisbane.
Oh, was that in Brisbane?
Yes.
Okay.
That's hilarious.
All of the supermarkets were not allowed to open yesterday at all. In every other state, they were allowed to open from 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But in Queensland, for some ridiculous, archaic reason, supermarkets weren't allowed to open all day.
That's with one exception. Doing, I bet you.
with one exception being the Woolworths at the airport. And so, of course, people who, you know, thousands of people have moved to Queensland since the last Anzac Day. So a lot of people here didn't realise that, myself included, didn't realise that nothing would be open on Anzac Day. So, of course, a lot of people went to their local supermarket, went, what the hell, it's not open, logged on online and found out that the only one that was open in the entire state was the Woolworths at the Brisbane airport.
Boy,
so,
was it busy.
Thousands of people turned up at the Woolies at the airport and there were, like, almost riots of people
That's
trying
hilarious.
To get into
it. It's like panic buying.
It's, yes. I mean, I don't know what is wrong with people. For goodness sake, just plan your weekend, for goodness sake.
You know, like, Easter, you know. And it's like, I'm sorry. Everybody loses their mind before Easter, and it's like, you know this every single year. It's the same. And, Do your shopping, and it's one day.
It's one day. And restaurants were open, fast food was open. No one was going to starve.
No. I don't have any food. Heard of Uber Eats?
Supermarkets are open, so if you needed toilet paper or toothpaste or something like that, you can go to the supermarket. You can go to the petrol station and get that.
Corner shops, they're allowed to open.
Yeah. If you can't survive one day without going to the supermarket, Lord, what's wrong with you?
Seriously, there's something wrong. Actually, you know what? A funny story, quick aside. I live in Elsternwick and I'm on Glen Huntley Road and there's a massive Coles on Glen Huntley Road. And it's all been redone, and I live above it. Mm-hmm. So if I run out of milk, I just go to the lift and press G, and I'm in Coles. And I'm like,
that's cool.
Look at all these people. But yes, that's nothing to do with anything. I just thought it was interesting.
If it was that convenient for me, I would be in Coles about 17 times a day.
Seriously, I go down there. I'm like, you know what? I got home from work today, and I went, oh my God, Rob's taken all the black socks. I need black socks. I'll go down to Coles. There's lots of black socks.
Yeah.
How dare he rob your black socks?
I know, right? He went off to his very hard job in the very hard place where he works very, very hard. And I have to sit here in my cushy apartment doing my cushy job and I complain about the socks. I really need to get some perspective.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter now. You've got new socks. So
I do.
That's all that matters.
He can have the old ones. You've got the new ones.
He stretched them out. They don't fit my little size 6 foot anymore anyway. He stretched them out. He can keep them.
I want to mention another thing about Anzac Day, which I find intriguing. And maybe I'm mixing this up with Good Friday. I'm not sure. Where the bottle shops, or off-license if you're listening in Europe, are open, but the pub's closed. Or is it I think that's the way it works. Do you guys know about that? What kind of law is that?
I know the bottle shops are open.
Yesterday, both the pubs and the bottle shops were all open.
That's Anzac Day, by the way, in case you're listening, because we're delayed in recording. I mean, in going to air. Yep.
But I think on Good Friday the pubs aren't allowed to open, but bottle shops are.
What is going on with this?
If the pubs open, then Jesus will cry. So you can't have that. So they don't open.
But don't you think it's a ridiculous rule?
Yes.
I mean, I don't understand.
I've never understood any sort of restriction on shopping hours for, like, if you own a business and you want to open it at 3 a.m. in the morning, you should be able to.
Mm. Do you know when I lived in London in the late 80s, they had all this Sunday closing issues going on because you couldn't open. We're talking about a city of 8 million people, right? London, on Sundays.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to open. I think some places were allowed to open, but a lot of shops, like closed shops, couldn't open. And there was a big hoo-ha, but I agree with you, Adam, because I live in a world where I don't know when I'm waking up or sleeping because of the hours that I keep. And, you know, I'd love if the shop downstairs was open like at 3 a.m. I'd be very happy with that, but it's not.
When I was a kid growing up, everything would close at midday on a Saturday and not open again until Monday morning. Like weekend Sunday trading was not existent when I was a child.
It's a real pill for people who work a 9-to-5. Mm. You know, you don't. It's a real pill. I remember late night shopping was a thing.
Yes,
yeah.
And that was very exciting time.
That was a Thursday night.
Yes, it was. When you got paid, and we all went out. Yeah, we all went out and spent all our money that we'd just earned. All my parents did, but I remember thinking.
Or we'd just sit at the Norfolk Pine and get drunk.
Well, that's the thing.
Adam's referring to our many Thursday night drunken sessions at the Norfolk Pine. In Redfern, near Redfern in Sydney.
Back when we used to get paid in cash.
I know.
You know, just to let our listeners, we all worked for TNT. Adam and Rachel didn't meet each other for some reason. I think Adam left or something. But I remember at Christmas, because we were on 2 weeks holiday or something, forced, they paid us in cash. Like I'm walking down the streets with like a grand on me.
It's like, those were nervous days. I remember that too. You used to get a little pay packet from the ANZ bank, and it had a little slip of something in there to tell you how much you'd been paid, and you never read it. But I remember walking around with an envelope full of cash thinking, this is bizarre, but the first envelope of cash I ever got was when I did The Sound of Music.
Oh, yeah.
And they handed me this thing with money in it, and I was 12. And I went off my guard.
Did you buy lots of sweets?
I bought lots of everything, and then my mum realised, and then she didn't let me have them. But
very funny story. When I was packing up to leave Sydney, 14 years ago, I was going through boxes of stuff, and I found an old TNT payslip, pay envelope.
Yeah.
That hadn't been opened and had my full week's pay in it.
Oh,
you're kidding
God.
Me? How much was it? It wouldn't be much.
It was like $200 or $300 something.
Yeah, that's about
the
right.
The old notes too, and not the plastic notes, the paper ones.
No, the old notes, yep.
Fantastic.
Wow.
And I was like, there were so many weeks where I was living hand to mouth and I had no money, and it was like, how the hell did I manage to somehow put an unopened pay packet in something and leave it there? It staggered me, but
I'm
it was
so
fun.
Glad that was one of the boxes you opened.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Oh my God, it's like a time capsule. And did the pay slip say sucked in, you work for practically nothing? Because that's what they should have written on them.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're about to go. I just want to very quickly, at the risk of putting Rachel to sleep, a bit of a catch up on the federal election coming up on the 20-somethingth of May. See how well I'm informed.
The 21st.
Anything dramatic going on at the moment, guys?
Anthony Albanese, our opposition leader, is in lockdown at the moment because he has COVID. And many would assume that would be disastrous for an opposition leader to not be able to be out campaigning for 7 days. However, there were two opinion polls done on the weekend, over the long weekend. Albanese and the Labor Party are still streaks ahead of the Liberal Party.
Leave that thing. Stop fidgeting.
Sorry. That tells
somebody
me.
Somebody else is binging. I don't know.
I need to get a silent mouse. tells me. I'll have a silent mouse for the next time we speak.
Okay.
That tells me that people have already made up their mind. It's not a case of them waiting to see what Albanese says and does, what Labor says and does. They're just saying, we're sick of this government and we're voting Labor. The other important thing, now, there's a very silly poll that happens here in Australia, which is one that the bookmakers give their odds on which side is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And up until the weekend, they've all been giving it basically to the Liberal Party. However, the pollers, the pollsters in the online betting companies, this weekend all flipped, and they're all now predicting a Labor win.
You know,
how they should decide this? They should decide it with two up.
Yes.
It's the only Australian thing to do.
It's a great idea. it's interesting because I tend to think that Albanese, who was locked down for 7 days, is not a bad thing at all. I don't see that as a bad. I don't understand why people have to go out in the streets, and these politicians, half the time, they're risking their identity by coming up against abusive humans, abusive people.
And
sorry, if you're what's happening you now? Force people to shake your hand anyway, don't
yes.
you?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what's happening this week, since he's been in isolation, is his front bench, the opposition front bench, the alternate cabinet, are all out in the media to fill the void left by Albanese, the leader. And they're all very competent people, and very good performers in the media. So
it's
what's
a nice
happened,
introduction to them, because not yes. a lot of us know who they are and what portfolio they cover. So it's a
and
nice
so all,
introduction.
All of a sudden, we've now got not just Albanese, but we've now got the whole front bench, which have got a bigger profile than they had previously. And their profile is positive. It's being positively received by people. So Albanese is in that bizarre situation where it's actually better for him to be in isolation.
He's got a good crew. I like the cut of – I've always liked the cut of Richard Miles' jib. I really have. He's the deputy opposition leader, so he'll be our deputy PM if they win. And he's a very slick operator
Jim Chalmers
and smart.
Is doing a great
he's
job
very
as
good.
Someone said I'm not
– Chalmers is doing a great job as opposition treasurer.
Yeah, he is.
Tanya Plibersek is performing well. Christine Keneally is performing well. Penny Wong is doing an outstanding job.
She's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Put that, hold that up against Morrison and his front bench, who none of them are giving interviews. None of them will talk to the press. None of them will meet the constituents in their own electorate. it's bizarre. It's the most
it's
bizarre.
It's like the Avengers versus the people who aren't the Avengers, who are just baddies. And and in comes Albo, and then goes, gotta go. And then these dudes step up, and it's really like, you know, Captain America, and it's like the Hulk, and, you know, Hawkeye. Yeah. It's amazing. They're doing a great job. It's theirs to lose.
Maybe it's a new form
compare,
of... sorry, Adam, yeah.
Sorry. Compare Miles, the deputy ALP leader, with Barnaby Joyce, the deputy prime minister.
With the human beetroot?
Yeah. Like, hello. There's no competition.
No.
Someone was saying that one of these people now, I'm not, like... these people are becoming high profile now, and it's a good thing. But isn't it interesting that it took something like this to maybe change the way these electioneering, like these things go before an election? Because it could be a whole new way of doing things.
Look, I love it. I agree. You know, I think getting COVID was brilliant.
Yeah,
I think if he went out and went to somewhere in the shady western suburbs and licked something, and then got sick, then good. It was good play. I think
good
he's,
planning.
He's got some really smart people around him. They've really done him up and done him up a treat. And
the timing is perfect.
It's perfect. So I reckon
because he's still
said,
got 3.5 weeks left.
Just
once he comes out of isolation,
let someone cough on you. Yes, and it's like he's on the home stretch. It's honestly, it's his to lose. He would have to do something cataclysmically terrible.
Yeah,
at this point.
Yeah. Now I've got one little piece of prediction or gossip, which I've seen several posts about this so far this week from insiders within the Liberal Party, and they're predicting, they're saying that the middle and left side of the Liberal Party are about to dump something on Morrison, which will destroy his career.
Oh,
nice.
Oh, please do tell.
Now, I'm not sure if it'll be this week or next week, but what's important, what's significant about this is that there's a significant number of people within the Liberal Party, within the Prime Minister's own party, who are prepared to lose government to get rid of Morrison.
Mm.
And are
they
saying,
one of their Turnbull people, yeah?
Yes.
Yes.
We understand that we need to go into opposition to cull the party of Morrison and his evangelical rump that are hanging
the
in
cult,
there that he's put in place. Yeah. So
very interesting.
I think the next 2 weeks in this campaign are going to be pretty spectacular.
It's going to be
I can't wait.
A lot
you know
fun.
What? I walked past a big pallet of fireworks that I had to declare as dangerous goods today, and I thought these could come handy in a couple of weeks. I think I can hang on to these. I don't think I'll put them on the ship at all.
How did you find them?
It's actually part of my new job. I have to find everything that's dangerous, explosives, liquids, and I'm responsible for making sure they get on a vessel and don't bad
don't
things don't happen.
Back.
So
and don't explode.
not too much responsibility for me. But I saw them all sitting there, and there's pallets and pallets of them. And I just went, I don't think these should go anywhere. I think we should keep them because I think something cool's about to happen. And now you've confirmed it for me, Adam. I was right. I felt something in the waters that something was going to happen, and I was right on.
And I can just want to say that all of the polls across the board, right, left and centre, haven't really changed that much since the beginning of this. They're all still putting the ALP around 10% ahead of 10 points ahead of the Liberal Party. Now, of course, that will bubble around a bit and it will shorten a bit as we get closer to the polls. But I'll be stunned if I can't see how the government can win this. Every day there's a new scandal, there's a new problem, there's a new issue for them, for Scott Morrison. And it's just... And I'm starting to see the Murdoch press. Now, Murdoch, the only thing Rupert Murdoch hates more than the Labor Party is to pick the loser. And so I'm starting to see particularly news.com, but also some other Sky and such other Murdoch media in this country are slowly starting to switch around. They're being a little warmer to Albanese. They're being a little harder on Scott Morrison.
Just as you said, Adam, you know, just like Murdoch, these institutions, such as Fox News, of course, Sky News Australia is a Murdoch news organisation, and really they just want to be with the popular one, and that's what
they want to be the winner.
That's it. And I just quickly to note that the first debate was actually done by Sky News Australia, and Albanese won.
Yes,
easily. Over Morrison. Quite easily. And they were so-called undecided voters. I'm not so sure about that. But anyway.
I got the drum, by the way, the goss on the booing at the festival that Abbo went to.
Yep.
I got the goss on it, direct from Jimmy Barnes. What had happened was, prior to him walking out on stage, they had actually introduced Jimmy Barnes. So when Jimmy Barnes didn't emerge, there was booing. But it was not directed at Abbo, because they're all peace, love and kissing at these festivals. It's all about that.
What they announced was, we'd like to introduce now the working class man. Mm-hmm. Now, working class man is a huge Jimmy Barnes song.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Albanese walked out, that's when some people booed, because they were expecting Jimmy Barnes.
You're not Jimmy Barnes. It wasn't at him. It was the fact that
Jimmy
Barnes.
They weren't booing the fact that it was Albanese. It's interesting. Yeah. They were booing the fact that it wasn't Jimmy Barnes.
They didn't mention that on Channel 9 News.
Of course not.
Anyway, we've got to go.
Who's chairman of Channel 9? Peter Costello,
ex-Liberal
treasurer.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting? And actually, quickly to talk about the ABC, you know,
you were doing an appalling job, I have to say, during this campaign.
Yes, I agree. But the thing is that the funding for the ABC has been trashed so badly by the Liberal governments of the past, how many years, I don't know. Labour are promising, if they get into power, to put money back into the national broadcaster. As badly as, you know, I feel their news has gone very centre, almost centre-right. It doesn't have to be left. I'm not saying it should be.
No.
They're supposed to be neutral. You know?
Supposed to be centre, dead on centre.
Yeah. And so it'll be interesting to see if Labour...
And let's not forget that
I know who you're
going to say. Ida Buttress, who's now running the ABC, was put into that role as a captain's pick by Scott Morrison.
Yes, and we have to remember that she comes from a commercial magazine background. Okay, we've got to go. Thank you both so much for joining me here on this evening.
Pleasure.
And we'll talk again as we enter this election. This election. It should be interesting.
The last panic, the last push.
Will we be able to say, you know, will we know what's happened, like this big surprise that you're talking about, Adam? Will it have happened by the next time we talk?
Here's hoping.
I hope so.
Okay.
Although they could very well, if they're clever, hold on to the last week with it.
Yeah, they could.
That would be a smart move.
The final nail.
In that big old coffin. Okay. Yeah. Rachel Brunson and Adam Devlin, thank you both for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
Welcome.
Pleasure.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Pick of the week. Okay, we're here to talk to do Pick of the Week. Pick of the Week is where Adam, who is a music guru, has a discussion with me about a song that he wants to play. We're doing two of them this week. Cliff Richard was born in 1750. I'm joking. How old is he? Let me tell you a story. And we're going to do Cliff Richard with Olivia Newton-John, the Australian singer Olivia Newton-John. They've got a song that they put together and they're singing together. I've heard it. I just want to make a point about Cliff Richard, if you don't mind, Adam, before I let you get off on this.
Of course. Oh,
sorry, excuse the expression. When I was in a car in 1974, I was 12, and my father and my stepmother were in the front. My father was driving, and it's 1974. And my father said to my mother, "I think Cliff Richard is a homosexual." And my stepmother said, "Ah, don't be silly." And I often wondered since. Now, is he gay?
Yes,
and did he ever come out?
Yes, he is. He has come out. He's of course lived with his long-term partner for quite a while, number of years, and he and his partner, I believe, have even had a commitment ceremony.
Oh,
together. But he keeps his private life incredibly private.
And why not?
And why not? Absolutely. You know, when you've been around as long as Cliff Richard has, you know, it wasn't until later in his life that he started to relax about his sexuality. And for many years he did deny it. But when you've been around as long as he had and you've had as many hits as he's had, and you've avoided scandal the way he has, you know, I think he deserves a little bit of privacy about his private life. And
the other thing is time has moved on. I mean, I talked about 1974. You know, in those days, it was a tough call for anyone. I mean, there's so many Elton John, you know, famous people who were gay and really couldn't come out because of a number of reasons.
Absolutely.
Not to mention the fact that the popularity of
it would have been commercial
shifted.
Suicide for either of them to come out. I mean, same with even people like Freddie Mercury at the height of their career. You know, he wouldn't have been able to come out either. Even though everybody knew, you know, as you said, you know, your father was suggesting in the 70s, well, isn't Cliff Richard gay?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone was shocked when he came out and, well, he never actually confirmed it. He just sort of, you know, started slipping it into his narrative that he was.
And by the way, I'm gay.
You know, nobody, I don't think, could have ever been surprised that Elton John came out as gay. But, you know, even though we all knew this, they couldn't say it at the time. And thank God society has progressed to a point where, you know, up-and-coming artists, people like Troy Savine,
who's for example, an Australian singer,
Can actually now be out and proud. And
that brings me to, you know, when I first met you back in 1989 and we worked in TNT, a freight company. And I remember you and I sitting over a fire, believe it or not, here in Australia.
Yes.
There was a fire. It must have been winter. There was a fire in this pub. Just a little fire, you know, not a... The pub wasn't far. And you told me you were gay, and I thought, what's new?
And you're one of the first people I'd ever told. So
I think I was. Now, tell me about Cliff Richard and Olivia Newton-John. Interesting mix. They probably have known each other forever.
Well, Olivia owes a large part of her career to Cliff Richard. Their friendship and their professional relationship goes back to the 60s, when Olivia first went to England in the late 60s. She toured around a bit doing some singing on her own and with Pat Farrow as Pat and Olivia. And then she got a guest role on the Cliff Richard show doing backing vocals. And she did one episode and Cliff liked her and the audience liked her. So they invited her back to duet with Cliff. And he added her permanently to the show.
Was this before she made it in America? Obviously, this is in Britain.
Yes. Right. Yes. This was before she had her own recording contract.
Okay.
And so she was doing backing vocals and she was touring with Cliff Richard. And he recorded a couple of duets with her on some of his earlier albums in the late 60s. Then, of course, she got her own contract and, you know, her career took off both in the UK and in, more importantly, in America. You know, they both continued to have private, personal success, solo success. Then Olivia asked him to be involved in a recording of the soundtrack to Xanadu, where they recorded the single Suddenly.
Lovely song. I love that song.
Beautiful song, and it was a big hit for the two of them. And he, moving forward in the 90s, he wrote and produced a musical in London called Heathcliff, which was the story of Wuthering Heights.
Of course, yeah.
And Olivia performed with him on the official soundtrack release to that musical called Heathcliff, Songs from Heathcliff. And actually, I think they did four songs together on that, and one of them, called Had to Be, was released in the UK as a single and was quite successful. They've recorded together on numerous albums of each other's over the years. And in the 90s, in the early 90s, Olivia had was coming back from her first bout of cancer. And she hadn't toured for quite a while. She hadn't recorded for a little while. And she was wanting to get back into work, but she was nervous about doing it, and she wasn't quite sure if she could do a full concert. And Cliff Richard was planning a tour of Australia. And so he said to her, look, please come on tour of Australia with me. You know, I'll do the first half. You can come on and we can do a couple of duets. You can do a set on your own. I'll come back on, do another couple of duets, and then you can go off and I'll finish the show. And she was like, yay. So that they've toured together in Australia, and that was a phenomenally successful concert tour.
And when was that?
That was in the early 90s.
Oh, okay.
It was actually the very first time I saw Olivia in concert.
I was going to say, Adam Devlin must have gone to one of these concerts.
And you know, they've continued to record with each other spontaneously throughout the decades. In the mid-90s, they even hosted the World Music Awards together in Europe.
Gosh.
So, you know, and they call each other best friends. So, you know, I'm not surprised that on this album, on Cliff Richard's new album, that he has one duet on it, and it's with Olivia.
Okay. Now, look, tell us about this song. It's called Everybody's Someone.
Yeah. It's the new single. It's called Everybody's Somebody. Everybody's Someone, sorry. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not a new song. The song has been around for a couple of years, and it's been recorded by a few other people. But it's a beautiful message about, you know, just being positive and just understanding that no matter what you're going through in your life, even at your darkest ebb, to somebody, you're special. Okay. And it's this whole album of Cliff's, by the way, it's called Rise Up. And you may recall, Henry, that he's had some legal issues of late with the BBC.
Yes.
where they pretty much accused him of pedophilia. Yeah. Based on a raid that that Scotland Yard did on his premises, on one of his homes.
That's right, yes.
Now, there were no charges laid. Scotland Yard released statements saying he's got absolutely nothing to answer for. He's not under suspicion of anything. However, in the meantime, the BBC had gone out publishing these stories. Anyway, he sued the BBC for defamation. He won the case, and he decided that even though he was quite bitter about what they'd done, because, you know, that sort of mud
it's not good, and it sticks. It's the mud that sticks, and it's, you know, I understand that there's, you know, the Me Too movement, all that stuff that's going on. I get it. I understand it. A lot of people did a lot of bad things. Australian, you know, Craig McLaughlin is accused of doing stuff. And the thing is, I have to say accused because legally no one knows, really.
No, that's right.
It's unfair. I have to say this, and I'm going to be bold and brash when I say this, but a lot of people are doing a lot of shit to a lot of famous people because they think there's gain in it. Is that a fair thing to say, Adam?
I think there's a certain amount of that going on, Henry, and I think it's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, to accuse somebody of sexual impropriety is
how low can you go?
Exactly. I mean, if you're doing it falsely, if the person is innocent and you're accusing them of this and it's going public, then, you know, you really are the scum of the earth. Because as we just said a moment ago, this, you know, there's all, once it's out there, there'll always be somebody that all, will believe it and and will go, well, you know.
Look at Jeffrey Rush. And, I mean, yeah. It's like there's this kind of wave going over the world. And I do, I want to stress this. I understand a lot of bad stuff went down.
And if you've sexually assaulted somebody or harassed somebody and, you know, your career is destroyed because of it, then good. If you're guilty.
Yes, if you're guilty. This is the problem. Okay, look, we've got to move on. This is Bondi Tunes International. Adam Devlin is with me. He's our music guru. And coming up, we're going to be talking with about... Oh, I wish we were talking with Dolly Parton. That would be good. Dolly Parton's new song. Adam, would you like to present this song from Cliff Richard for and Olivia Newton-John for us?
Absolutely. Here it is. This is... it's one of the album tracks off his new album. The album is called Rise Up, and it's his... response to the legal troubles he's been having over the last couple of years. It's an album of positivity, and I think that's an amazing response to what he's gone through. These songs are about respect and love and treating your fellow man the way you'd like to be treated yourself. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you this song. It's called Everybody's Someone. It's a beautiful song. Cliff and Olivia, of course, have recorded many times in the past, and this is the latest duet they've done together. It's a brilliant song. I love it. They sound amazing doing it. And so here they are, Cliff and Olivia with Everybody's Someone.
And every day begins the same. Get up, go out, come back again. Same old, same old. A thousand faces pass you by. You never look into their eyes. You feel so ordinary. They feel so ordinary.
Stop. You're more than who you think you are. Hey, everybody's someone, and when it's hard to hold on, remember you are not alone. This house is everybody's home.
Inside the lives of Bondi Tunes international correspondents, Adam Devlin.
I'm Adam Devlin. I was born in a small coastal town back in the 1960s and lived there until I was 18, when I moved to Sydney to go to uni. I came out as gay in the early 1990s and was one of the lucky ones, in that my friends and family had absolutely no issue with that. I've had a few careers over the years. I started out as a cook and then moved into corporate customer service. I'm also a writer and have had several poems published. I've won a playwriting competition and had several film scripts that I co-wrote produced. I also co-wrote and acted in a comedy drama series for ARTV, which was a bit of fun. I've also contributed to several books on pop culture, and I'm currently writing a book on the 1980s Hollywood musical Xanadu for BMNO Media. 10 years ago, my partner and I moved from Sydney to Melbourne, and that was the best move we've ever made. We love living in Melbourne. It has great restaurants, a thriving bar culture, and Australia's best art scene. We don't have any children, but we do have a 23-year-old cat called Stella and a 14-year-old dog, a Maltese cross, called Maddie. I'm one of those weirdos that lives for politics, and I've been blessed to have been Bondi Tunes Australian political reporter for as long as there's been a Bondi Tunes, and I love doing it. I'm also passionate about music and have a vast music collection spanning almost every genre. And I also, from time to time, do a musical pick of the week for Bondi Tunes, where I'll discuss and then play some new music that I think is particularly good. For fun, I like to catch up with friends and watch old movies. We love to travel, and we've travelled to almost every continent, and hopefully we'll get to them all in the coming years. I love being on Bondi Tunes, as it's real radio with real stories from real people right around the world. You just never know what story is going to come up next. This is the Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, and I am Bondi Tunes.
Inside the lives of Bondi Tunes correspondents, Adam Devlin.
Baby, I'm a lucky cat. talk about the girl, saying to the boy, you and me are lucky to be us. Happy talk, keep talking, happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You've got to have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how are you gonna make a dream come true? And if you don't talk happy, and you never have a dream, then you'll never have a dream come true.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.